Assalamualaikum, salam sejahtera. Saya Ibrahim Sani, ini Agenda Awani. Hari ini, isu yang paling hangat diperdebatkan adalah tentang isu 5G dan juga bagaimana kerajaan ingin roll out 5G di dalam pasaran. Saya untung kerana pada hari ini, dua teman daripada Digital National Berhad bersama saya pada hari ini, Dushan Vaitinathan, iaitu Ketua Pegawai Operasi DNB, dan juga Dato' Ahmad Zaki Zahid, Ketua Dasar dan Hal Ehwal Awam. Mungkin Dato' Ahmad Zaki boleh memulakan perbicaraan kita pada hari ini. How did we get here, generally speaking? I'm sure benda ni dia tak timbul dengan begitu sahaja. Tapi kalau boleh Dato' terangkan secara kronologi mungkin, bagaimana we ended up where we have to do right now?
Terima kasih Encik Ibrahim. Perancangan untuk 5G bermula dalam tahun 2018 lagi dengan penubuhan 5G National Task Force untuk menasihatkan kerajaan how to deploy, what are the priorities dan sebagainya. Report telah dikemukakan kepada kerajaan pada akhir tahun 2019. Dan juga ada laporan MCMC tentang spectrum allocation untuk 5G.
Sorry, I have to clarify. Yeah. This is under the Pakatan Harapan government.
Yes,
it okay. started under. So two administrations ago, generally speaking.
Saya.
All right.
Saya. And after the reports were delivered to the government, there was no movement in terms of 5G, and we found that neighboring countries were launching their 5G services as well. So at the end of last year, and announcement in February this year. The Malaysia Digital Economy Blueprint was launched dan salah satu infrastruktur critical yang disebut dalam My Digital Blueprint tersebut adalah 5G. Selain daripada jendela untuk 4G dan broadband services, selain submarine cable dan cloud services. So 5G menjadi salah satu infrastruktur critical yang perlu untuk melonjakkan negara ke depan dan untuk benefit of connectivity disampaikan ke seluruh negara.
Okey. Jadi kita nak faham tentang the change of policy. Because as we mentioned earlier, the telcos were asked to build the 5G network by themselves. And as you rightfully pointed out, in March this year, there has been a change of policy. I wouldn't say change of heart. I'm sure a lot of deliberations were put into the matter. But generally speaking, now we have a single entity to roll out the 5G, to be called single wholesale network, and this is to be retailed out, sold as retail to the telco wholesale. Okay, the big ask, as we prefaced early on in the show, is no other country in this world is doing it this way. Then why are we doing it this way?
I mean, it's a very interesting question, and I think the point that you first brought up about the typical policy has always been to allocate a certain part of the spectrum to the different telcos, and the telcos build out their own networks. And that happened with 2G, 3G, 4G. Moving into 5G, actually, the report actually came out with a policy recommendation that said that the most efficient and effective way to roll out 5G, given the huge investments that wouldn't be needed to roll out a nationwide network, was to do it through a consortium. So the premise of a consortium had been brought up actually fairly early on. That recommendation was done in 2019. Mm-hmm. I'm a little old, so I can go back 10 years.
About 10 years of advance in 2009.
In 2019. The effect of the consortium, or the structure of the consortium, or the equity structure of the consortium, hadn't really been defined yet. There was discussions around a private consortium, including all the existing operators or the industry players. And this had been going on since 2019. In 2020, that moved on to a discussion, but no movement had been made in terms of the formation of that consortium. And I think the policy then to define a consortium driven through a self-funded consortium, not a government-backed or a government-invested consortium, but a self-funded consortium, moved to a single entity, basically identifying to kickstart the 5G rollout. Basically going back to all the points that you mentioned, when you looked at us compared to our regional peers, when we looked at us versus how far we had moved with 5G compared to our regional neighbors, we were behind the curve, and we needed to kickstart it. Now, to the second point, which is the point that everyone is asking for. If this hasn't been done anywhere in the world, why are we doing it in Malaysia? And why are we leading in that space for a single wholesale network across the entire infrastructure? I think the scale that we're looking at in Malaysia is probably where we are fairly exclusive, where we are quite new in doing this. But shared networks, shared multi-operator core networks have been done before. Now, typically, it is between two or three different entities, private entities, sharing that infrastructure and being able to therefore bring the prices down and drive efficiency. So a single wholesale network as a single infrastructure may be the first in Malaysia as a single entity, but the sharing of networks and using MOCN technology or multi-operator core network technology has been done before. In fact, as close as in Singapore, two operators there, M1 and StarHub, have actually created an entity and shared their 5G spectrum with that entity and have rolled out a 5G network using the MOCN technology.
So the issue, of course, has been, we've heard twice now, Datuk Zaki as well as you, explaining that nothing has moved. We're now down to March of 2021, just a few months ago. And then the government said, okay, we're going to create a new entity. We're going to call it Digital National Berhad. And you folks are going to be rolling out. Then where does the telcos fit in this equation? If you guys are rolling it out, if you guys are building the network, how do they make money? I mean, they are private entities. They have to make money, right? So how does that work?
Can I say the reason for us to roll out is to do an accelerated rollout. We are behind our peer countries, regional countries. We needed to get it out very fast. We needed to do it quicker than 4G in the past so that the benefits of to consumers and to industry. 5G takes a different dimension to benefit to enterprises and businesses. So we needed to deliver this rollout quickly, and we needed to do it for the benefit of the economy on a cost recovery model too, not to make any money from this. So that's an important element of the government's policy direction to accelerate rollout.
I think it's really important for us to also realize, I think, the pandemic and MCO has changed substantially the way people not just work, but interact, engage, do their transactions. I mean, it's not just in Malaysia. The world has flipped. And given that, connectivity is probably the most important single, well, I wouldn't call it a service, almost a utility that is required by the population to be able to create value and to carry on with their lives. Now, 5G, of course, and I can tell you all about the great, ambitions of 5G and what 5G can do, but 5G literally is connectivity.
Yeah.
And it's the next step of connectivity. It's putting people in touch with each other, it's allowing people to interact with each other, and it's allowing people to transact with the world and, as an intermediary work to connecting people in the world.
Mm.
Now, the fact is, MCO has also shown us that where there is a disparity or there is a gap or there's a divide, clearly, the economic value or the value creation in those societies can be very different. And when we roll out connectivity and we roll out networks, our mandate is to basically accelerate that rollout so that as much of the Malaysian society can get access to this very important service to then be able to develop, create value, as well as engage with each other much more effectively.
Please correct my perception here, if I got it wrong. Your mandate is to roll out at an accelerated rate. Then the biggest elephant that we need to address in this room is the telcos are not signing up. Is that a fair...
Well, I think the issue is, a little bit more understanding in terms of, and I really don't want to get into the technicalities of it.
Yeah.
But there is a process, because we are a single wholesale network, the one definition for who we are is we are an equal access provider. That means because we're the only one rolling out this network, we have to provide access to anyone who meets a set of criteria and seeks that access. Mm-hmm. Now, that allows for us to be very transparent in the way that we identify the services that we provide, the price points of that services, as well as how and what the recourse is for anyone who seeks access from us and if we don't meet those benchmarks. That comes in the form of a document called a reference access offer. That document is usually a document that is also then built on a regulation, typically the MSA, which is a regulation that defines what should be in this reference access offer. So it is not a commercial agreement. It's not us sitting down and negotiating separately with each, you know, access seeker and say, oh, for you we'll give you this, for you we'll give you this, for you we'll give you this. We have to build a published document that sets those guidelines so that every access seeker goes through the same consistent rules and service rules as well as pricing that anyone else seeking access would need to. That document is the first part of then going into a further negotiation with the individual telcos to then create wholesale agreements or commercial agreements specifically about, you know, what that, you know, to contractually bind both parties, therefore, in those terms, right? So when you said, have the telcos not signed on,
The
process is not for them to sign on now. The process is to be able to build the specific access offer, publish it, get MCMC, our regulator, to basically align around this and approve that access offer, which also includes the pricing that we will be selling our wholesale service on, to be able to publish that, then to get the access seekers who are looking access through our network to then show their interest in seeking access based on the RAO and the terms of the RAO, and then to move into a commercial negotiation before we finally have a contract that binds us based on those terms in the RAO.
So where are we?
No, here? Just to be clear, that process is not yet completed. So how can we say they have signed?
Yeah. So I mean, you know, the process of which, I mean, you know, in our ambition to accelerate the rollout, in our ambition to ensure that we deliver 5G as quickly as possible to as many people in Malaysia as possible, we set ourselves some very, very tight timelines. One of those timelines was in 6 months from nothing as a greenfield project.
From March, basically.
From March, right? I mean, in March, we had 2 employees. 3. And, you know, with the help of a lot of consultants and staff, and we slowly hired more and more people, we've been able to at least now identify, and I'm sure we'll come to that, identify our network equipment provider, manage to get commercial contracts around infrastructure and fiber, being able to build a commercial platform that is the basis of the RAO, which is now being taken through with the MCMC for approval. So where we are now, and so what I'm saying is that maybe we were a little too optimistic. Typically, a RAO would require a regulation, and that regulation typically takes 12 months to create. And you start with a public inquiry and all of that. We are now building on our RAO, and we're moving very quickly, and we've had a lot of engagement with the industry, as well as with the MCMC, to ensure that all the views are put together and we're aligned around that document. Because once that document is published, it sets the guidelines, right, for how wholesale is going to work in Malaysia on 5G. So we're in the process of finalizing the reference access offer. Now, once that's approved by MCMC, we will publish that, and I'm not saying on this laptop, but we will publish that on a website, so any access seeker will see the terms of that offer and can seek access with DMB.
Okay, so now the issue at hand is actually more of realigning the timeline. You were saying, you were quoted by Reuters actually, and now here you're saying that the 6 months might be too optimistic then. So what is the...
Optimistic in the sense that, you know, will we have every I dotted and every T crossed? I think what we aim to always do was to launch 500 sites by December 2021 to cover KL. That ambition we will meet, and that ambition is what we're working towards. Now, in the scheme of things, when you have new access seekers coming onto a new network and integrating with MOCN and all these things that we've now tested and showed that it works, there will be still some time to ensure that, you know, the finer points of that relationship and the service all work. So we're identifying with the fact that we are going live. We've already shown that, you know, on yesterday we launched with the minister our MOCN integration with all the operators, and it works. we will be moving from that to a cluster of sites, ensuring that it works not just on one site, but across a group of sites. So that's mobility, because it's really mobile. It's mobile connectivity. So we have to show that, you know, a cluster of sites work. We will move from that cluster of sites to basically a proof of concept to show that it works over a larger regional area. And we're using KL as the first step in that. And based on that, we will gradually move from a proof of concept to a commercial launch in some time after that proof of concept is I guess, what, how should I say, we satisfy and we're aligned around all the different terms, as well as the technology, as well as how everything works. But as a live environment, I'm sorry to cut you off, but as a live environment, as a live network, you know, Malaysians should be able to get access, at least in that area, to 5G services by December, by at least by, you know, I can't confirm on the date yet. I think have we announced the date for the...
Generally speaking, next month.
Next month, yeah.
Okay. So please realign again my understanding. The 500 sites in KL, 5G, can it still be rolled out by you when the MNOs or the telco operators are still finalizing agreements with you guys?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, yes. You want to take that one? And I can come in with a bit of the technicality.
No, absolutely. So it's actually 500 sites in Putrajaya, Cyberjaya and Kuala Lumpur. The work is already proceeding. We have hundreds of sites that's going live, right? So the services will be available, but of course it has to be connected to the wholesale, to the mobile operators, because we are wholesale service providers.
So the mobile operators play a critical...
We are connected. I mean, and that's well, I wouldn't call it irony, right? But that's the irony. I mean, although we've had so much debate about the mobile operators not being interested in signing on, they have progressed so far in terms of the technical integration, and they're all there queuing up to be the first to be integrated onto the 5G network.
With you?
With us. You know, and we've gone through, we've got five stages of basically going from a test environment to a live environment to a cluster environment, then to a proper national grid, right? And we've now got all the way from the test environment and we're going into the live environment. And all the six industry participants have gone through those three stages. One is going through the last stage as well. And they're now ready to go into stage four. And they're actually sitting down with us through a, you know, we have working groups on technology and security every week, maybe twice, three times, continuously asking us, how do we integrate this? What are the security measures which should be put in place? So the irony for me is, you know, everyone seems to seem, oh, the telcos are not interested. But in terms of the technical integration, they've been a huge part of not only giving us really good guidance in terms of what they expect in terms of service levels or KPIs, but also very interested in the integration itself.
You can understand the skepticism from the public right now. Anything that is monopolistic in nature always brings about that question of control, yeah. Absolute control, to a point where there could be no scrutiny, or even if there is scrutiny, there's no point to argue it out or to complain, because if you guys are the regulator and you guys are the service provider, then you're one and the same, then what's the point of complaining to you guys if you guys are the ones that are going to be rolling it out? Do you feel that this kind of skepticism is warranted?
It's easy to think of it as a monopoly. We're not a monopoly. We are a single neutral provider of wholesale services to all licensees, all telcos.
But there's no one else offering the same thing that you guys are offering.
But we are under scrutiny and we're regulated.
So it is a monopoly?
In the sense of a single provider, in that sense, yes.
Okay.
But we are a provider of wholesale services that will go to the telcos, that will then on go to the consumers.
In the end, our license can be taken away at any time, right? Remember, we're a regulated entity, right? And although we've been provided a license, we have to meet certain criteria, and that criteria now is very transparent. And if we don't meet that criteria, that license can be taken away. We don't necessarily have the right to be able to provide 5G network for...
Okay, that's what I'm getting at.
No, but you, you know, you mentioned,
but
also...
We still have to meet certain KPIs. We still have to meet certain transparency requirements. We still... And I'll come back to the pricing. I'm sure you want to talk about that. How is that derived? Why do you think that's fair?
Yeah, we're talking about the purpose of existence for now.
Yeah, so in terms of the purpose of existence, firstly, we're a licensed entity. We're regulated, scrutinized, and we're transparent. Secondly, we are also an equal access provider. which means we have a set of rules that we publish, so it's transparent. Anyone who meets basically under a business license, there are three specific categories of licensees who can access our network. It's network service providers, NFPs and ASPs, but again, technically, but they are a certain set of regulated entities. Clearly, you want regulated entities, not just any Tom, Dick and Harry to come in and get access to the 5G network and ruin it. So any of those entities can seek access. So we can't be a monopoly in deciding who can, who cannot, how do we monetize here, how do we not. We have to give access wherever we've rolled out this network, and we intend to hit 80% of populated areas by the end of 2024. We have to allow that network to be accessible to any access seeker.
So you have no right of refusal?
No, as long as you meet those...
Ibrahim Sani Telco wants to come
and meet a specific... You got a license, you meet those specific, you can meet those commercial requirements, you should be able to get access.
And then, of course, as you were mentioning, sorry, Dato, but as what Dushan was talking about, you guys have a certain requirement, KPI. So if this is not met, then MCMC, your regulator, my regulator as well, actually, can just take it away.
Yes. And I mean, in essence, I think the MCMC as a regulator has a right to question our denial or our acceptance of any entity into that network as well, right?
No, I just wanted to say that you mentioned abuse of power. There's no such thing here. We are a single provider, but we are regulated. So in that sense, we're open to everyone, as Lucian says.
Okay, let's now talk about that very important element of pricing, because it comes down straight to the structure of DNB. You guys, as I understand it, are a state-owned network operator. There's a lot of billions being thrown about, from 11 billion to 16 billion. I'm getting here 45 billion and then another 60 billion. Banyaklah billion, senang kata. So how do I go about this whole billion? Yeah. I tak reti sangat pun.
So that time billion, it becomes an even bigger issue, because when you 20 billion and 16 billion, there's a lot of difference.
Yeah.
Right? It's not like billion.
It's like billion. But because the key to understanding pricing is also the key to understanding the business motives of DNB.
Absolutely.
So the easiest question is, are you guys a profit-making entity?
So we are a cost recovery entity. So we had an accelerated rollout based on cost recovery. So whatever is the cost, we will just recover that. It's not about making money in that sense. The idea is to deliver services to the people.
Remember, our mandate was two things, okay? Cheapest wholesale price for 5G that's possible with the best quality. So we don't want to sacrifice the quality of the network because we're just going to underprice the product, right? And in essence, therefore, if you look at that as our mandate, the way we have worked to ensure, and it's self-funded, which is very important to note as well, the way that we have worked on pricing is a very simple concept. We basically are doing two things. We are basically rolling out a network of 7,509 sites, okay, to cover 80% of the population. Each of those sites will have a cost, okay? That cost is then defined in very clear parameters, and to MCMC, who has seen all these numbers, in terms of what goes to the equipment, the technical part of it, what goes into the fiber that required to connect everything together, as well as the poles to put your equipment on. You have to rent those as well. What goes to your tenaga or your power to ensure that everything can be lit up? What goes to the regulator as an assignment fee for each of the towers that you, each of the sites that you have, as well as what goes to running this company and making sure that we can continuously upgrade, future-proof, innovate, build more sites, ensure the quality of the overall network. Now, that total cost is basically the cost that has been associated to the 7,509 sites that will be rolled out between now and the end of 2024.
The next three years.
So the point of a single hosting network is to reduce costs as well. So use existing infrastructure, accelerate rollout. Because we are working on economies of scale, the cost is going to be lower.
Okay, so how much cost are we talking about here?
So if you break down those costs, maybe you want to just go through
so,
that.
So, no, in terms of cost, the network equipment and infrastructure cost is $12.5 billion. $4 billion for the equipment, $8.5 billion is the infrastructure-related cost, including fees for MCMC and cost for power to Tenaga Nasional. This cost primarily will be, the $8.5 billion primarily will be within the country, spent into the domestic telco industry.
You're saying this because there are accusations that if you do have a lot of vendors, many of them are foreign companies. Yeah. Is that what you're trying to allude
to? That's not the point of saying what I did just now. It's about the domestic industry benefiting from the rollout as well.
Yeah. Not just benefiting. What we really wanted to do was not to disrupt, right? Because it's very easy for a new company, given this mandate to come and roll out a new network, to do it all on its own and basically watch the existing industry, the existing players who've invested in the existing network or the previous network, to not see any benefit from it. Our mandate was basically to maximize the investments back into that industry so that on a net-net basis, they can actually reduce the price or the cost to serve to their end customers. So if I am telco A, right, and I own a tower and I own fiber, and DNB wants to put a site, a new 5G site on it, if I pay the telco for that tower and if I pay some telco B for the fiber, right, I'm giving them back money that then can translate into them being able to pay even less for that net-net, even less for that equipment or rental of that equipment, which we hope will then be transferred to the end user. Mm. So the whole basis of these billions and billions, you know, there are some people have seen 11 billion, some people have said, 7 billion, some people have said 16.5 billion, some people have said 20 billion. The essence of it all is it's 12.5 billion. It's 11 billion plus, and I'm going to be completely open here, that, you know, in Malaysia, and again, if this is too technical, please tell me, right? In Malaysia, we have a huge gap in terms of fiber to the site. In more developed countries, 80% of those sites are fiberized. In Malaysia, it's closer to the lower 40s, depending on where you are. It can go up to 50%. In very dense urban areas, 60%. But 5G, to build a really good backbone for 5G, to build a really good platform for 5G, to then be able to provide all those great applications and solutions and services, you need to fiberize more sites. So we are actually taking the fiberization of our network up from the low 40% to 70%. That requires a significant investment because we're not just using the existing fiber, we're going to also roll out new fiber using the telcos capable of doing it and roll it out to 70% of our sites. So the 11 billion that you heard was actually including fiber, but not including the fiber that was required for the additional sites that we wanted to fiberize. That is an additional 1.5 billion, and that's what takes the total cost to 12.5 billion.
To be spent over 3.5 years.
No, to be spent over
12.5 billion? Okay, so there is certain costs that you will spend because it's capex or capital or investment, the equipment you buy. The site, the fiber you rent. So that 12.5 billion is over 10 years because we're renting it over 10 years. But there are certain components of it, which is a capital investment, which you're buying equipment that you pay now.
Can I also make the point, the 5G Task Force report also states that the cost that they estimated for each telco to upgrade their own network was about $7.5 billion per network.
Just on equipment?
Just equipment. And if that were true, then the 5G network with four or five net providers or four or five mobile operators would cost more than 30 billion ringgit. The 4G network has also cost a lot of money as well. Capex has been more than 26 billion. You add Jandela, more than about 28 billion. You're looking at a large amount of money that has been spent over 4G. We want to minimize that. We want to reduce costs. We want to accelerate the deployment. That is why the single hosting network comes up.
Okay. The most important thing right now is, of course, the end user. It doesn't matter retail users or business applications. It's all about me. What do I get? Yeah. Right? Can I do a VR operation theater if I'm a surgeon? You know, that kind of fancy stuff that, you know, we all talk about 5G. This onus is now being fully transferred to the telco operators because they are no longer doing the 5G network. This idea looks very good for the consumer. Are the telcos looking at this positively? I know you don't speak for telcos, but what has been the conversation like?
Yeah, you know, we really can't speak for the telcos, right? But what I mean, and exactly what you said, because you made a very good point, is where is the innovation going to be? Where is most of the innovation going to be? Is the innovation going to be on the application services solutions, or is the innovations really going to happen on the hardware, firmware of the network itself, right? So what we see, and I mean, and one of the reasons why the mandate has been given, the network has a lot of new technology that can create efficiencies and all that, but it is literally your baseline product that it's a, you know, it's a utility product that everyone can build, and everyone, as long as you have a balance sheet that can afford it, you can build it. But what becomes really important that we've also said is we're using MOCN technology because we want the industry players, the telcos, the mobile operators to own, innovate, and drive greater services back to their customers. So we have made it very, very, very specific in our mandate again that we integrate into the core of the telcos or the mobile operators. We could have easily said, look, we'll build our own core, everyone come and integrate our core. We are the one responsible for what sort of products you will sell, what sort of services. But we're very clear-minded about the fact that actually that's where the innovation is going to be. It's going to be with the telcos. So we made a significant effort to ensure that we used MOCN technology so that the ownership of the customer, the services sold to the customer, the product catalog that goes to the customer, any innovation on those on the services is all managed by the telco. Mm. The only thing that the telco will be using is a radio network that we build that will be equal for all. Mm. So it's still very much part of their responsibility, if they want to see it as that, to establish greater product, services, solutions for their customers.
Hear me out. This concept of wholesaling and selling to providers is not new in Malaysia. Please correct my understanding. In the petroleum industry, Petronas digs the oil, puts it in a refinery, and everyone else plays around with it.
Puts additives.
They add additives, Shell, Caltex, all that. That's one area. So it's been done before in Malaysia for the past 5 decades. Yeah. Energy, Tenaga Nasional, yeah. Maybe. Yeah. They develop the grids, yeah. They develop sources, yeah. Now alternative sources. Yeah. Tenaga is very big on that. Yeah. And I'm using electricity every day. Yeah. Even while I'm sleeping, I'm using electricity. Yeah. Is this just yet another addition to that?
Yeah. Yes. It's it's a wholesale service, so it's exactly the Petronas example is a very good example of what we're doing.
Okay, then with the comments that you have given over the past, I don't know how long you've been talking, but generally speaking, that whole notion of industry support, it seems like it's well integrated with what you guys are rolling out. Yeah. Is it then fair to say that there is a lack of industry support when it comes to DNB's efforts and ongoings?
Again, we're way too premature in the process of things to say that. Is there industry support? No, I've spoken to you, but in terms of technically, they're very supportive. And they've gone very far with us in that whole process of the technical integration to make sure all their cores work with our network. So, I very hard for me to say that.
Yeah.
But it is quite, I mean, and again, you know, I shouldn't be sitting here defining what is what, right? But it's very interesting when you talked about oil, you talked about power in the same way. I mean, they've broken up water and other utilities now into specific regions. But
that is a whole mess that I'm not ready to get into right now. But yes.
But yes, when something becomes a necessity, when something becomes the God-given right of a person to use it because it helps them get through the day, build value, feed their families, whatever it is. And I mean, I'm not preaching here, right? Then the only thing that we should all look towards is ensuring that we create the cheapest possible way to deliver that service to a single individual or a single enterprise. So we don't need to differentiate on the network, we feel. You build a really good quality network that everyone can use, so it doesn't depend on your balance sheet whether you have a lot of money to build a new network, good network, or much less money to build a not-so-good network, which is how all the MNOs have been differentiating before, which is I have the best network, or I have coverage here, or I have speeds here. That primarily is built, you know, I mean, I'm not taking anything away from the engineers who are also very good to optimize their networks and stuff like that. Primarily built on how much I can invest in the network, right? And that creates then a differentiation, which they promote through their own branding. What we're saying is like Petronas, oil is oil is oil, right? Spectrum is spectrum is spectrum. Radio waves is radio waves is radio waves. Create the radio waves, ensure that everyone gets access to those radio waves, provide those radio waves or radio access to each of the individual entities. let them use that radio waves or that utility or that, you know, oil to define how they want to sell it to their end users, as well as the innovations on top of that. And I'd like to think, you know, and I think, you know, those of us who work in DNB truly believe that that connectivity needs to become like a utility. It needs to be provided for everyone to continue to grow and create value in this country.
Another area of concern is the issue of 1MDB. Some detractors out there, I don't know how else to put this, there's no other better way to put this, have equated the efforts that is being done at DNB with that of 1MDB. I don't know where this came from.
Yeah.
But what you can sense that whole skepticism, all right? We've been burned once and we're still reeling from it. Is it a fair parallel to be talking about?
I mean, we are building a service. We've got equipment that we are delivering, infrastructure that we're building. We have a product that's coming out. It's a connectivity product that is going to be available to everyone. The telcos will be delivering the service to people. People will pay the telcos. They will pay us for our wholesale services. So there's no parallel to it. The tender process was done with strict governance. It was done, I think, in a way that lends credit to no issues about any hanky-panky or anything. So I think integrity-wise, there's no issue here. But it's easy to say because it's billions of ringgit. Maybe that's what there's a parallel.
So there are two aspects. And I mean, you know, I totally understand. It's very easy for us to sit on this side of the table and say, well, there's no skepticism. Of course there is going to be, right? When you put out, we just talked about 16 billion, 20 billion, 11 billion. When you have that much money going through any project, there is always going to be why and what is this project about. I think the clearest differentiator between a government-funded project and DNB is we're not government-funded. We will only be able to fund our network when we get users using our network, the private sector using our network and paying for access to that network. Of course, we've got bridging finance that gives us a bit of time before, you know, we hit an inflection point and those cash starts to come in. But we're not using government money. Yeah. We're trying to build a network that's cheap, effective, great, and also fund it by getting the people who are getting a great service to pay for it. Now, if someone doesn't get a great service, like you did say earlier, but you're a monopoly, they have every right to go to the regulator. The regulator has a right to see whether we're meeting those SLAs. So to me, fundamentally, we are government mandated, right? We are a company that has been defined to play this role to drive 5G adoption and 5G our network coverage. But that's as far as it goes. We're not a company that is subsidized or funded by the government to deliver that.
So it's a bit inaccurate to say DNB is a state-owned entity.
No, it is owned by MOF, but tapi tak ada peruntukan kerajaan, tak ada guarantee kerajaan, no funding from government. So all the funding or financing is from the private sector, from the MNOs, but from banks. And so there's no parallel in that sense to issues around 1MDB, for example.
Okay. Let's now zoom out and talk high level. Imagine us as ministers here. Senator Tengku Datuk Seri Zafrul made a declaration publicly right after Budget 2022 announcement that in the first quarter of next year, we're going to get a certain percentage of people access to 5G. Is that a lofty target to have, or is it fairly reasonable?
Well, so by the end of this year, we'll have KL, Putrajaya and Cyberjaya.
Yeah.
Just about under
10%. 8%, yeah.
Yeah, just under 10%. Then we'll go to 40% next year. 2023 will be 70%. And 2024 will be 80%. So this is what we mean by accelerated rollout. We believe we can deliver the targets.
Yeah. So, I mean, to get, I mean, and this is a show that, you know, a lot of people are watching, and I'm sure a lot of people are interested. So, when do I get 5G, right?
Yeah, I mean,
that's going to be the question, right?
No, because I'm thinking exactly that. And I live in Kota Damansara.
Okay, I'll try to get it there earlier.
My 4G is falsely advertised. I don't want to say who my telco is, but I'm barely getting across, right?
I know. And, you know, yeah. you know, the issue with that, and, you know, the issue with that is everyone has started to use so much more data after MCO, right? I mean, think about how much you're doing through your phone or your laptop now, right? So you're basically using more and more, so there's still one side that has to carry all the traffic. Now, if you do not make money from all the data that you're using, more money, incremental money, it's very hard to invest in more and more sites. I bet your plan gives you maybe 80 GB, 100 GB.
Mm-hmm, something like that.
And you used to use 15 GB.
Mm-hmm.
And basically all the other GBs was basically there for you to use if you wanted to, but you were kind of paying for it because you paid a bigger plan.
Yep.
So now you've moved from 15 GB to 25 GB, maybe. I don't know what, but
yeah,
you know, let's just say 25
GB. Yeah.
But you're not paying your telco a single extra dollar?
No.
But you expect them then to also build a site to manage the additional traffic. So
yes,
it becomes a very difficult proposition commercially to manage the fact.
But that's the retail business, my friend.
I agree.
Semua nak lebih.
I agree. And you know what? With the internet, it's never going to stop, right?
Yeah.
You build better technology, you build better applications, you build better solutions, boom. But, you know, in the way, somehow that needs to be funded. So this model of, that's I know, again, it's very hard for me to presume, but you could see that as one of the issues which would have limited the accelerated rollout of these entities based on, do they make incremental revenue to fund the new money that is needed to build a 5G network? So anyway, going back to your point. So should people be excited? You know, we talk about 80%. Populated covers by 2024. So it is KL, Cyberjaya, Putrajaya. Unfortunately, Kota Damansara is not in KL, but the good news is, in 2022, we will have most of Klang Valley already covered. So that will include PJ, Subang, Kota Damansara, all those areas. And this will be phased in quarter 1, 2, 3, 4 of next year. In addition to that, we'll be going to Johor, to East Malaysia, to Northern Penang. So, and we'll start almost like a beachhead territory, right? We'll start building first and then spreading out. And that should cover, by end of next year,
40%.
You know, despite all this very aggressive efforts that's being done by the telcos as well as by you guys, we're still 40% by the end of next year, assuming everything goes according to your plan. And that is still behind most of our neighbours. Do you feel that, you know, we really have to explore back? I'm not one that wants to go back into looking at past sins and the failures of our forefathers. But generally speaking, there has to be some learnings here, right? We started the show with nothing was moving. You know, you have some efforts like My Digital and all this other stuff in between. It's like, what went wrong? I mean, we were quite far ahead when it comes to, you know, connectivity with internet. You know, is this something that the ball was dropped somewhere?
Well, we're the first large government policy relating to ICT was the multimedia super corridor. Of course, 25 years ago this year. I don't think we let go of the ball. I think clearly there was some lack of movement on 5G, and that's being addressed right now. We're getting at 5G. When we go to 2024 at 80% coverage, we're back at maybe number 2, number 3 position in ASEAN.
Mm.
So we're back in a regional leading position. And that's the point. I think if there was any slowness in movement, we're addressing it now.
Mm. We're professionals trying to build a network. I can't define where policies go right or policies go wrong.
Mm.
But I do think if you read the My Digital Blueprint and you look at what it identifies with and where we should be as a country and how we need to develop as a country, I really think that is one of the most important documents. Because I'm a tech guy, right? But I believe it is things like the digitalization of the economy, the digitalization of government, the digitalization of enterprise, cloud, you know, digital IDs, all these great things that are already happening in a lot of countries. Singapore's moving very fast with that. We'll be able to transform a country to one that can create much more value, much more effectively. Where we, don't look backwards, look forwards, right? And I'm always a very excited Malaysian when I see the potential, because I think Malaysia has the most amount of potential of any of our neighbours to be able to achieve these things. I think with the right policy. And I think policy is very important, but I think sustainability, execution,
all right,
management.
I'll accept your challenge. Let's look forward. What happens if there's a change in government? We've had 2 changes in the past 3 years. Will this policy continue? Will DNB continue to provide the services? Or is it really questionable in terms of the survivability of DNB as an equal access provider, assuming there's a new administration that is put in place in Putrajaya?
Well, it's difficult to answer for the political masters, Ibrahim. But our job is just to deliver the network and deliver it on an accelerated basis, deliver it at the lowest cost possible so that people can start enjoying 5G from next month. That's the idea. And then given the importance of the digital economy, everything's digital now, right? Whether you talk about education, whether you talk about businesses, the rural digital economy is becoming more important. So we have to make sure that services go to setiap pelosok tanah air. It cannot be... It's a connectivity issue. It must be to all parts of the country.
Yeah. I mean, you know, if we talk about the issues of the past, okay? And I mean, I'm not going to talk about the past because the future is
much more interesting.
Much more interesting,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It's always been because of that that we've probably failed. We've had sometimes really good policies, really good concepts, really good ideas, really good blueprints. You know, really good blueprints. But the execution of that blueprint, the continuity of those ideas and the investment in those ideas are very important. We cannot, like you know, Zaki did say, we cannot predict and we cannot tell you whether this policy will have the backing, the continuous backing across any political agenda or whatever. But what we can do, on top of building an institution that we think will meet at least the initial needs of it, is to also build a foundation that we hope will restrict, allow a governance that should basically work in any sort of policy environment. And that's one of the things that we have been very clear about, and we've mentioned it. And I think, you know, even our Minister of Communications has brought it up and said, we are a scrutinized, regulated entity that is putting in foundations and policies and regulation and terms that we hope will allow this entity to somehow execute and operationalize the concept effectively. And that's all we can do at this initial stage.
Berikut tadi perbincangan saya dengan Datuk Ahmad Zaki Zahid, Ketua Dasar dan juga Hal Ehwal Awam Digital National Berhad. Dan sebentar tadi anda telah mendengar Dushan Vaitinathan, Ketua Pegawai Operasi ataupun Chief Operating Officer DNB. Jika anda terlepas mana-mana bahagian di dalam rancangan ini, sila layari astroawani.com dan cari agenda awani. Cari juga DNB dan juga 5G. Terima kasih kerana bersama kami. Kita jumpa lagi di rancangan yang akan datang.